Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
Look, I know that it's the big debate now. I understand that politically, socially. You'll hear about it on virtually all of talk radio television, everywhere you turn, as the Congress returns to another session of their work, serving us as lawmakers. It's the debate they will take up, health care reform. President wants to address them about that as well, hopefully kickstart something he wanted to be done by now, health care reform. But why should Christians care? I mean, Christians can honestly disagree. There is no thus saith the Lord on how much we pay in taxes, how much we pay for health care, how we do it, the how of health care. Why should we care about this debate? We're going to talk about health care reform and life issues for the first half hour of Issues Etc. today. It's Wednesday afternoon, September the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Maggie Carner will join us from the Life and Health Ministries of LCMS World Relief and Human Care. After our conversation with Maggie about halfway into this hour, we'll have some audio open lines. You've heard the story on the news, haven't you? Teenage football player, 16-year-old, along with about 10 of his buddies, taken by his football coach on what they're calling a field trip. They ended up after a steak dinner, apparently, at a Baptist church for what was billed as a motivational speaker. When they all got back, most of them had been baptized at the Baptist church, including this 16-year-old whose parents are none too happy about it. I want to know what you think about it. Coming up here in about 25 minutes, audio open lines, Issues, etc. Should the kid have been baptized? He's 16, after all. He can think for himself. What should the parents do? What would you do if your son or daughter came home from a football or a volleyball field trip, gone to hear a motivational speaker and have a little steak if they came back baptized? 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or if you're following us on Twitter, @IssuesETC, @IssuesETC. We'll talk health care reform with Congressman John Shimkus in the second hour of the program, followed by a long conversation. Hopefully we can get everything in, because this is a huge subject, biblical inerrancy. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will join us. We'll talk about the old view of biblical inerrancy, especially in light of what some are proposing as a new, which it's really not that new, but it's a newer view of biblical inerrancy. They say, you know, the Bible's kind of like Jesus, divine and human. And the human part is really human. There's errors, contradictions, and all sorts of mistakes in there. We can't talk credibly about inerrancy anymore, some say. We'll see what James White has to say in about 90 minutes here on Issues, Etc. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us @IssuesETC. Maggie Carner is Director of Life and Health Ministries for LCMS World Relief and Human Care. LCMS World Relief and Human Care has produced an information page about health care reform. Hi, Maggie.
Hey, how are you?
You know, Christians can disagree, can't we, about the money, the means, all the things surrounding our medicine. Why should we care about health care reform?
Absolutely, Christians can disagree. There's, you know, a lot of people say, well, let's just stay out of it. It's politics. You know, why are Christians involved in the political spectrum anyway? And I guess I'd, in a sense, I start with, you know, that politics can be a noble endeavor, but it's also a very messy business. And unfortunately, in today's society, a lot of social issues get dumped into that big rubbish pile of things for citizens to have to sort through. And a lot of those social issues have to do with moral concerns. So for me, you know, and obviously Matthew 5:16 says that we need to give evidence of our heavenly citizenship by being good citizens on earth. So obviously all Christians are going to want to be involved in the political spectrum to the extent that they want to vote and, you know what's going on and be up on current events. But you're right, Christians can disagree about a lot of areas in the political spectrum. But when it comes to moral issues, that's when we take our feet out of the kingdom of the left or the secular kingdom and step over into the right, the kingdom of the right or the kingdom of the church. And that's when we kind of put our church hat on and say, okay, how does this affect the society that we live in from a moral standpoint? And in that sense, I think it's important for the church to provide guidance and leadership to the rest of the world, kind of act as a moral compass on some of these issues. And I think it's important for us to do that.
So what concerns, I mean, if we are going to act as moral compass, I think you're quite right there, and also address this as citizens personally, when you look at H.R. 3200, known as America's Affordable Health Care Choices Act in 2009, what kind of things concern you there morally, generally? What issues do you find there? And then we'll get into some more specifics.
Okay, let me just start off by saying it's difficult to even have this discussion because that piece of legislation or proposed legislation is so vague, it's even difficult to have a discussion about it. So I guess I would step back and say we're still, you know, even though they've put pen to paper and, you know, put some things out there for us to look at. And by the way, I encourage everyone on our website, we have a link to that piece of legislation that people can actually read. You know, it's not good beach reading at the moment. I mean, it'll take a while to get through. But I encourage people to take a look at it, and I think they'll see that it's very, very vague. And you can kind of infer anything you want to into that. And that's what's scary, because we want to be very clear. This is a huge move for our country. This is monumental, and it's going to have long-term effects, you know, economically and socially and morally, and we want to make sure that we know what we're getting ourselves into. You know, when you buy a car, you make sure you know, you kick the tires. And so I guess this is kind of where we're at right now. As concerned pro-life citizens, we're kicking the tires. And we want to say, okay, let's look at all the, and let's walk around the car, look at the whole thing, look under the hood, and really analyze what we can analyze based on the verbiage that's given there. And if we don't have enough information to make a decision morally, then we need to point that out. And that's kind of what we've done in our webpage. And that's kind of, you know, we don't want to go and be, have some sort of reactionary, you know, fly off the handle and say, oh, this is horrible, that sort of thing. We're not going to give, as the church, we don't really have the responsibility to give people direction on, you know, make a decision for them. All we can do is point out the moral issues that could be of concern here. Until we see the final, you know, until the rubber hits the road, we won't really know exactly if our concerns have been addressed or not. But it's important for us now at this point to address those concerns, make them known to your legislators so that, you know, when things, you know, as this whole thing evolves, and it will, that they take us seriously. So the big things that we're concerned about are end-of-life issues, questions concerning the care of the elderly, end-of-life decision-making, extended care, those who gets to make decisions for care at life's end. The second area of concern is areas concerning the protection of the unborn. And how does that fit into this whole legislative piece? And the third area is the protection for healthcare workers' conscience rights. And does it allow them to abstain from participating in or dispensing medical procedures or medicine or counseling that they would deem immoral?
Let's start with the one that you started with, end-of-life concerns. This one's, there's been a lot of hype surrounding it, death boards and things like that. But what, and you said this is primarily in terms of its ambiguity, with only about a minute and a half before we take our first break, Maggie, what in this bill concerns you with regard to end-of-life decision-making?
Well, right off the bat, I'll say that this is primarily found, this area of concern is found in Section 1233, which is referred to as advanced care planning consultation. And this, right off the bat, when you read it, nothing jumps out at you that's alarming. But there are three areas of concern that could be potential pitfalls. The first one is that it doesn't require that family members be present in a doctor's office when this discussion about end-of-life issues takes place. It directs physicians to have an end-of-life conversation with a patient at regular intervals, which in itself is not a bad thing. Everyone, no matter what age, should discuss with their families and their doctors their feelings about life-sustaining treatments before something happens. So that's not a bad thing.
Okay, Maggie, let's take a break here.
Okay.
When we come back, I want the other two things that that at first glance are of concern in the healthcare reform, the proposed healthcare reform legislation with regard to end-of-life issues. I mean, that's a concern to me. I think about my parents getting older. Do I want them alone with their physician? Do I just want them in there alone with their physician without me around to help them make some of these decisions? We're talking about healthcare reform and life issues. Maggie Carner is our guest. She's Director of Life and Health Ministries for LCMS World Relief and Human Care. It's Wednesday afternoon, September the 9th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. 10 more minutes with Maggie on healthcare reform and life issues after this.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Every Tuesday, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. Issues, etc. online at issuesetc.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit the CLCC.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the support section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in word and sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Wednesday afternoon, the 9th of September. I'd like to poll our listeners. Where do you stand on healthcare reform? Give us a call, email us, or you can always send us a tweet on Twitter. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. By the way, we're going to post a link to the resource we're working with Maggie. They've added their website, Healthcare Reform and Three Specific Life Issues Concerns, at our website under the On Demand page, issuesetc.org. Click On Demand. Maggie, you mentioned before the break that one of the concerns about end-of-life issues was no requirement for family members present during these consultations, end-of-life consultations. What was another specific concern with regard to end-of-life?
Well, and again, I guess the biggest concern is in the implementation. What materials are going to be used? What are the worldviews of the medical professionals who are going to be doing this counseling? And often patients may not know that they're allowed to bring a document of their own, whether it's a durable power of attorney for health care or a will to live, a God-pleasing type of medical directive for end of life. Patients may not know that they're allowed to bring those to that conference. So there may be a misunderstanding or a perception of a pressure to sign some sort of a form, and if you don't know the worldview of the medical professional that's counseling you, it may be a very confusing, distressing scenario for some people facing end-of-life decisions. The third thing that really concerns me is that the organization that helped write this particular section of HR 3200, they worked tirelessly to support the members of the Congress that were writing this, and this organization is called Compassion and Choices. And this is this organization is a descendant of the Hemlock Society. That is a pro-assisted suicide and pro-euthanasia organization started by Derek Humphrey. You may have heard of that. So I that sends red flags to me right off the bat. So those are the three areas of concern that I have about end-of-life concerns, and I want to monitor this and see how this thing evolves to make sure these areas are addressed.
What concerns regarding the unborn?
You know, this is an area that you hear a lot of debate about. You know, people say, well, it includes taxpayer-funded abortion and all this. And then you'll hear people counter and say, no, abortion doesn't even appear in this bill. You know, you won't even see this in the legislation. And you're right. You don't see the word abortion anywhere. But there is some red flags that, you know, obviously I've got my antennas up. So these are things that have piqued my curiosity and have my antennas way up. In Section 1714, the section called State Eligibility Options for Family Planning Services, right off the bat, it offers taxpayer-funded family planning services. Now, we don't know what they mean by family planning services. There could be no limit to what kind of medical assistance, medical diagnosis, treatment services that can be provided at taxpayer expense there. Not only does it say that it can be provided to adults, but also these services can be provided to minors who can be considered to be sexually active and not just to those who are sexually active. Nor is there any mention of parental notification or consent before providing treatment services, in quotations, to minors. What does that mean? Well, we in the pro-life arena have known for years that family planning services can and often does include another term that's often used. Reproductive rights includes access to abortion services. And so that's our big concern right there. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, in her acceptance speech, stated that increasing the level and quality of women's health care worldwide depended on increasing access to family planning options. And she stated that abortion is a part of those family planning options. So, and then as this piece of legislation has been formulated, pro-life people through pro-life Republicans have worked to introduce verbiage into this legislation that specifically identifies or excludes abortion from any of these family planning services, but they've been knocked down every time. So I have questions about why can't they be specific that abortion will not be included?
Steve is listening in St. Louis. Thanks for being patient, Steve.
All right. What happens I see a lot of times is I'm hearing the you know, the part with the ambiguity, people read both extremes in. And one thing that we don't talk about is what is our role as Christian citizens about the millions of people who can't afford health care, either through unemployment or poverty or whatever, or the fact that the cost of insurance is so high. And how do we, and my question is as Christians, what is our role and responsibility to helping those people? Because, you know, because rightly so, we're focused on the end of life and the beginning of life. But sometimes as Christians, we completely drop the ball on the time in between.
Excellent question, Steve. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. What do you think, Maggie?
That is a great question. In fact, I've been asked that many times. And as the director of health ministries, obviously one of my big concerns in my vocation is making sure people have access to good health habits and health care. And, you know, yeah, you know, people accuse us of focusing on the beginning and the end of life all the time. But, hey, there's a whole lot of life in between those bookends that Christians need to be concerned about. The problem with this is that I can't say whether this legislation or any other health care proposal is going to bring the health care that, you are absolutely right, is arguably needed for many people who can't afford it. And whether this proposal can or can't do that, I can't address that, you know, and I'm not sure the church can address that either. The only thing the church is called to do, and that's, you know, that's what your human reason's for. That's why you read the newspaper. That's why you contact your legislature. That's why you formulate your own political opinions about this. My job, though, is to opine on those moral issues and tell you what the church thinks, what the Bible thinks about these areas and things that we need to just be aware of as we enter this dialogue, because that's what it is at this point. And I don't. You're absolutely right. We don't need to, you know, fly off the handle one way or the other, you know, and be extreme about these things. We need to have well-reasoned thought processes as we go through this. It needs to be well-researched, and we need to, you know, engage in the debate with respect and with concern for all of those that don't have health care, you know, right now at this moment. But I do agree, you know, when it comes to moral issues, it's fairly impossible for Christians to be unbiased, nor should we be. The church has been called to lead in these areas of moral question. But like I said, I can't tell you whether this piece of legislation is going to do what it says it's going to do or not.
Jeff in Philadelphia emails us with this. People aren't having enough babies to pay for a massive welfare state long term. You would have to have a pyramid-type shape to the population, oldest being at the top. People have voted no with their wombs. Your thoughts there?
Good point. Absolutely. You know, we're going to pay, and unfortunately, this has sort of happened in Russia, with my experience in Russia. Their reliance upon abortion as an option to unplanned pregnancies is now becoming an economic problem for them. They have a zero population growth, and when it comes to getting workers, good workers in the workforce, they really have a problem finding and replacing human bodies because so many lives have been lost in the past few years.
One of the things, kind of the hidden concerns in this health care reform proposed bill has to do with, and people don't think about it this way, but it has to do with healthcare providers. Pharmacists, I think, are the ones that are most usually in the news on this, being required to dispense certain medications that they are religiously opposed to, and I mean their religion puts them in opposition to what these drugs would do, abortifacients and whatnot. Also, other doctors, medical students, and things like that. What does the healthcare reform have to say about these ethics in medical practice?
Again, the information that has been, you know, pen to paper has been very vague in this area. We know from previous actions from the Obama administration that they have had some situations in the last. Maybe a month into his administration, where he took action to kind of reduce the conscience protection clause that President Bush had put into effect. And it It doesn't. It just makes it a little bit more precarious. It doesn't solidify. Bush had put in this conscious protection clause for healthcare providers that solidified their protections, so that if they wanted to refuse to dispense any particular abortifacient or not participate in an abortion, that their job would not be at stake. This particular action that the Obama administration had done lifted this solidification. It's kind of hard to put it in layman's terms. So it's a little bit more precarious at this point, and they made themselves very clear that this was not a priority for them. The other implications of this whole legislation are sort of subtle, but a great concern is in the area of how insurance companies, employers, and medical professionals are going to be forced to provide or pay for, or as in the case of medical professionals, participate in contrary to their personal beliefs.
Well, let's take that up on the other side of the break. We're going to take a few more minutes on the other side of the break with Maggie Carner to talk about healthcare reform and life issues. More of your thoughts on healthcare reform after the break. You can call, email, or Twitter us during this break. Where do you stand on healthcare reform? Talk back at issuesetc.org. Twitter us at issuesetc or give us a call 1-877-623-6943.
The Lutheran Study Bible is the first time in the English language that the Lutheran Church has produced a study Bible to this extent.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Paul McCain, with his thoughts on the new Lutheran Study Bible.
It's entirely from scratch, as I say, using all original content. It will contain features that every Christian will love and cherish. It has what I think is the most important thing of all, a rich devotional quality to it that helps us understand when we are reading the Word of God, we are reading the mind of God and hearing His Word for us, and we respond to Him and pray, praise, and thanksgiving all through Jesus Christ our Lord. We are really excited about this Bible.
You can purchase the new Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our homepage, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, the Lutheran Study Bible.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc. This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Planned Parenthood of Spokane got caught with both hands in the cookie jar. The state health department has fined them $700,000 for routinely overbilling Medicaid for abortions, contraception, and family planning services. For example, Planned Parenthood falsely billed for a doctor visit when customers only came in to pick up a prescription. The overbilling was uncovered by a 3-year audit, so if additional discrepancies are revealed, there may be more fines. There's also the question of whether it was systematic and intentional. If so, they'll be charged with fraud. Looks pretty suspicious to me. And who's going to ensure this overbilling isn't still happening? Clearly, Planned Parenthood shouldn't be getting hundreds of millions of your tax dollars.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Maggie Carner is our guest for a few more minutes. Then we're going to go to some audio open lines. Hear a story out of Kentucky. A 16-year-old football player on a field trip to have some steak and listen to a motivational speaker came back baptized along with several of his teammates. And the parents aren't too happy about it. I want to know what you would do if your son or daughter went away on a sports field trip and came back baptized. You find out they went to a Baptist church and heard a sermon, although I think the kid said he didn't hear much of the sermon, but he did get baptized. Audio open lines in about 5 minutes. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. All right, Maggie, before the break, you were talking about one of the concerns about the kind of the public square ethics issues has to do with whether or not insurance companies are going to be forced by some legislation to pay for things that the owners, the stockholders, the direction of the company find objectionable. Tell us
right. More. Right. For instance, if this piece of legislation is passed and takes effect, a health benefits plan will be considered a, quote, qualified health benefits plan under this new plan only if it meets all the requirements that are set forth by the government regarding affordable coverage, essential benefits, consumer protection. Essential benefits is the key there. What does that mean? Okay, so in order for an insurer to become a qualified health benefits plan and continue to enroll new participants, that insurer will have to agree to provide payment for the initial benefit standards that are approved by the Health and Human Services Secretary. Okay, and all future benefits will have to meet that secretary's approval. So this leads to some concerns, all right? What if abortion is part of the benefit standards that the HHS secretary decides are essential benefits, okay, or if it's added later? And what will happen to those qualified health benefits plans that don't want to pay for a procedure such as abortion?
Okay, let's use this as an example very briefly. Many church bodies operate health care plans, and they do it like ours, for instance. The Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod has a health care plan with the certain providers, But the healthcare plan, if I'm not mistaken, does not cover abortion. It won't cover it for you, okay?
Right.
Are you saying that that might change?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen to Concordia Health Plans. I don't know what their decision will be, you know.
But are you saying the government might say through the health and health secretary, you have to do this if you want to continue to be a viable member enlisting plan?
Right. And this is decided by the Health and Human Services Secretary. Okay, so this is, and her, you know, her advisors. So this, you know, this seems a little top heavy there, and I'm concerned that, you know, who makes this decision? Who is making this decision? Not the voters. So this is something that concerns me here. I don't understand how they're going. This seems like it might be, you know, there's some accountability issues there. And so then once, you know, if this happens. And again, this is, again, one of those if questions. We just don't know because it's not – abortion is not specifically excluded in this plan. And until I see it specifically excluded, you know, in this plan, I'm still going to be concerned because I don't know what can happen on the Hill.
I want to come back to a question that Steve asked just a moment ago and press it a little harder with you, and that is, can we say – you're looking at this from a biblical and ethical standpoint. Can we say – as Christians, as a church, that those who truly cannot afford through infirmity, whatever it may be, those who truly cannot afford to provide themselves with health care or health care insurance need to have it provided for them in some way. Can we at least take that moral stand to say, I'm trying not to use the word, but it sounds like a good one to me, there should be universal health care covered publicly by those for those who cannot provide it for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think it obviously Christ provided health care for those in need, you know, and so that's, you know, for years this job was covered by the church. Only in modern days, when we've gotten rid of the common chest at the door of the church, has the government entered into this realm. You know, for years the church had diaconic hospitals and rescue centers, and the church, that was our realm, okay? So, yes, it is important for everyone to have access to care. It's pretty hard to tell the good news of the gospel to someone who's suffering. They're not going to hear you. So, yeah, it's our job as the body of Christ to try to eliminate the needs and the suffering of those around us so that they will see our good works and Christ will be honored in what we do. And you know, I guess that's where I fall down on that. How that happens in today's society, in a democratic society, I'm not quite sure how this is all going to shake down. How does the church interject itself into the debate?
One more question. Do you think, you said the big question mark for you is whether or not abortion can be explicitly excluded from healthcare reform legislation? How likely do you think that really is, that there will this will find its way to the president's desk and signed with an explicit exclusion of abortion?
Well, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be negative because I don't want to dampen the enthusiasm of all the people that are concerned about this and are you know, regularly contacting their legislators, which is something that we absolutely have to do. I haven't been encouraged by what I've seen under this administration. Let's just put it that way. So I'm not hopeful. If numerous times that exclusion has been shot down on the Hill, I'm not hopeful that that reason will prevail and they'll pick it up again. However, if the public response gets loud enough, you know, who knows? You know, maybe people will listen.
Maggie Carner is Director of Life and Health Ministries for LCMS World Relief and Human Care. They have a resource, an information page about health care reform that we will post at our website, issuesetc.org, under the On Demand section. Maggie, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, we'll continue a conversation on health care reform, talking about the president's address on health care reform with Congressman John Chimkus in about 20 minutes here on Issues Etc.